email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Dara Breen is coming back to Vicar Street next January and February, and he's online to tell us about his recreation tour. Good afternoon, Dara.
Good afternoon, Ray. How are you?
You're coming in loudly and clearly.
Good.
Who's top of the league table now in Vicar Street? There is a thing, isn't there, backstage?
It's very unofficial. It's very unofficial.
Go on.
It's going to be Tommy. Of course it's going to be Tommy. It's always Tommy. Tommy keeps sneaking back in and just you know, artificially bumping the numbers up. It's very, very challenging. But yeah.
And is there nobody? You must be challenging him, are you? I'm
in the same order of magnitude of him. I'm about 220 at this stage. I think he's about 275, whatever. And Joanne, she's gone now. Joanne McNally was looking fantastic there for what, and has moved and changed her focus now. I think she'd be playing the bigger rooms rather than, you know, being wedded. You know, but we can't get out of Vicar. It's too lovely. Just can't, you know, like whatever. And while the clock is ticking, who knows? Tommy could have a little accident. You know, a couple of tours. That could all be over. I think it'll always be him, unfortunately.
Yeah, so you're there January 22nd, 25th, and then February 5th to 7th of next year. And tickets go on sale now, is it? Now?
I think they're on sale now.
Yes.
We're around the country. We kind of announce them all around the country because all the usual spots that I'm in, whether INEC or Castlebar, some of them coming online this week, some of them online last week, but tickets on sale for most places now, yes.
Is it true among you comedians that you come up with a name for a show first and then...
Oh, God, there's no show. There's no show.
All right.
It's what the show doesn't happen. When is the show? Is it January?
Yes.
What is this? July?
Yes.
I don't have a show. If you put me standing in Vicar Street now, there'd be nothing. I'd have about 40 to 60 minutes of the 2-hour show that I'd be happy with now. And then we see how it evolves. We work it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have to put the poster in and the name in long before the whole thing gets finished. I mean, I'm still going to do Edinburgh and do like 2 weeks of work in progress gigs. So it'll change, even if I had like 2 hours of it, it would change now. So it won't reach its final form for a good while. But you need a name. I do know, I say recreation, there's a bit about a kind of a, you know, there's kind of a slight follow on to the previous show in a kind of a, you know, funnier, jollier way. The previous show was had a bit of serious moments to it, like but there is a kind of a more stories about my creation and who I have created and all that kind of stuff. Some of those themes will appear, but I'd hate to even now tie myself down to that just in case midway through the next couple months and go, oh no, here's a funnier story about a dog, and then end up dumping the original stuff.
The last show was about adoption and all that, so you're gonna and there were, it was a serious, you know, there were some serious
there
bits.
Was there was a thing is yeah and because it was it, there was a, there was at its heart there was a serious story of,
yeah.
of you know, a young woman and young women. There is obviously a certain unfinished questions in that which I will be addressing in this, but that's a far lighter, as it turned out, funnier journey in some ways. And so
this is,
you know,
meeting,
I was
with
kind of
your, meeting with your extended
well,
family.
Well, let's not
no,
get
but,
into
but,
anything. But yes. There is, and all that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah,
yes,
good. Okay,
nothing.
Right.
Give nothing away, right?
Right. Okay. Listen, you're better value than Nicki Minaj.
Yeah. Why? What does Nicki Minaj do?
You should put that in your poster.
That's a good poster.
Better value than Nicki Minaj.
Yes, yeah. Is this a ticket price thing, or does she not talk?
She was 89.50, and she came on for an hour, and within that hour, she went off stage for, depending on who you listen to, between 3 and 6 costume changes. And you're doing 2 hours, and not one costume change.
I have to say this now. There won't be any costume changes. I will be wearing a dark suit and a white shirt at the start of the show, and I will quietly change the shirt at halftime because it will be sweaty.
Yes.
And then I will put on a cleaner shirt, a drier shirt, and then the show will end with that shirt.
So officially, there is one costume change.
I would, but you'd be hard-pressed. If I hadn't told you about it, I'd buy a series of identical shirts and then just put on the other one.
You're in Croke Park the weekend for the hurling.
I was, and it was a fantastic event.
Were you working or
I was working. I was down the pitch side for the BBC. The BBC have, in their wisdom, decided to start showing GAA matches during the summer. The football clashes with the Olympics, unfortunately. So the focus shifted to the hurling, which is kind of always my secret plan, that, you know, try to get people in Britain to see hurling. So the hurling final will be actually on network and properly on the BBC, fully on the BBC on that Sunday. Yeah, it'll be your choice will literally be watch the men's Wimbledon men's final or watch the hurling final that afternoon on the BBC. And ours will be a lot better. So we did that down the pitch side, and I had been in Dusseldorf the night before. Because I got a ticket for the Euro 2024, which then turned out to be the England game.
Yes.
So I was in the stadium with the penalty shootout and the whole thing, and then got over to Ireland for this thing. And so I had a glorious weekend of it, and this is getting into a box of unrelatable content
Daryl Green, you have the comedy thing sewn up and the science thing sewn up. Leave the sport alone for other people, will you?
Ah, look, I offer very general opinions, though.
I don't think anyone's going to come to me for the specifics. And what's the atmosphere in England about the team? Because they've been booed off, and they're slagging Harry Kane and others. And
rightly so. He was wandering around like Frankenstein. The thing, he's just lumbering around the pitch like the Kane, but. You know, it's a bit like France as well. You know, they seem to be just getting through it. And I can see it being a France-England final that nobody wanted at any stage. But there's a kind of it's a bit like the election. You know, they're happy with the result, but they're not jumping around the place. But they recognise, grand, fine. It's kind of interesting to watch them because they've been fine. It's like they got burnt so often that they lower their expectations. Which we had waited for them to do for many, many years. And they're a far better company because of it, but they lower their expectations. And now they're kind of going, sure, how have we got this far? Which is amazing to see them say it, because they just don't think they played very, very well.
So they're Do you shout? Were you shouting for England when you went over to Dusseldorf?
I would say I wasn't shouting against them.
Was it your great grandmother or your grandmother?
It was my grandmother.
Yes.
for Ireland. But then there's great grandson, the son of mine, is sitting beside me. Sure, I can't turn to a child and go, in your face, take that. That's one for Switzerland. That's for Ockham. That's for 1798. I can't stand and roar at the child. You'd have to be perverse.
Well, they have to have a connection with their roots, Dara.
They do, but they also have. They also live But I sense
there's a bit of conflict there for you.
No, it's an interesting journey. Let's put it that way.
Right.
No, I got to be over here roaring against them a while ago now, because it became a bit perverse to be in company of friends and going, And although when they lost to Iceland, I was amidst a load of English lads, this is in 2016, and I were sitting watching the house. I had to go behind the couch and stand behind them because I was just enjoying it.
You were gloating so much.
I couldn't keep, I was, lads, that's not looking good for you now. And I had to sit back from them. So I can jump either way and it's like, it was a great host. Spectacle, but then it got trumped, of course, when we went on Sunday, because actually, as it turns out, the 82,000 was 30,000 more at Crewe Park on Sunday than there were at the England game.
The biggest crowd for an All Ireland hurling semi-final
ever. Absolutely, yes. And it was phenomenal. The noise was incredible at it. Like, it was a great
event. What a brilliant game.
A superb game. A spectacular game. Yeah. Every bit of it was good. And you're there knowing they're going to come back. And yet they held them at arm's length, whatever. And just the level, the quality of play was phenomenal. It was a great event.
You should feel all right about being there, because you did play County Hurling, didn't you, for Wicklow?
At a minor level.
But when you say minor, that's an age group as opposed to small in stature
I was weird because I was standing at one stage in a tunnel walk waiting to go and do a bit of chat on the pitch side, and I was with Jamesy O'Connor and Donal Oge Shane from Limerick, Shane Dowling from Limerick, and I turned to it. Why am I in this panel? And Donal Oge, to be fair to him, said, I should, Dara, hurling belongs to no one and it belongs to everyone. Fair point, man. Fair point.
He does great reporting on Morning Ireland of a Friday. Well, it's sort of previewing the whatever matches are on at the weekend. Yeah. So you mentioned the election there. So Keir Starmer, stability and moderation.
There's an element of, it's grown-ups are back in the room. It's sort of like, I know that people have ideological difference to it, but they'd really reached the end of a line on the Conservatives at that stage, and it was the dregs of it. So it feels just calmer. It feels like, you had a couple of bad boyfriends there for a while, but this lad's nice. This lad seems fairly solid. You know, I mean, you ran off with Johnson there and then you're flitting around and we didn't know what was going on. There was a touch of, you know, with the UK, it was a bit of a, are you okay, hon, for a while. And now it seems like, okay, this one, he seems a bit more of a marrier.
He's a keeper, this one.
So he seems like it could be unspectacular and it could be quiet, but it does feel to be a
certain... But you don't want spectacular from your politicians.
Oh, Jesus, we're exhausted of spectacular now. Yeah. We're had enough of it, like the... And it seemed to go from where... And then, like, even when they're announcing the election, they're off gambling on it. And you're going, Jesus, can you not for 5 minutes be competent?
The Tories were gambling on the results.
They were gambling on the date. They're apparently the Tories who would know gambling on when the date of the election would occur, when they then announce the election. And you're going, how many feet do you want to shoot yourself in while you're doing this?
I see that his cabinet has the most people who went to state schools and the most women.
Yeah. 41% of MPs are now women, and it was 90% state school,
right,
which is a massive. So it's all like it was 90% Eton when Johnson was in, like whatever, and now to have shifted away from that. I think it's gonna be really. Look, it's not gonna be miraculous because they're still out of Europe. They've still distanced themselves from the major trade partner, like whatever, and no one can talk about it for some reason. It's like the face tattoo of politics that people were going, I don't think you should do that, and they went and did it. And now we can't mention it. And it's like really, are you wondering why you're not getting as much work? Maybe it's a big spider's web in your face.
Labour can be different about Brexit because they didn't, you know.
Yeah, I think they couldn't during this campaign because it was felt that was going against the previous election. Maybe they'll slowly introduce at the very least a common market entry. I mean, even travelling into Germany, it's like I'm walking with my passport. The young lad beside me has a British passport, and sure, look, then we get diverted into this queue, and they're just beginning to notice this now that everywhere they go. I had a joke years ago about it'll break my heart to leave my family and take the faster passport queue, and then I retell it now going, geez lads, it was fun when that was prophetic, but it's doubly fun.
It's reality.
You've been sitting in some holding room in a Greek airport while the Irish have been sliding past going, good luck now.
But your children can have Irish passports.
They can, but there's a case of going,
they didn't get them
yet. Getting it done. Haven't got them yet.
They will. The more you travel, the more likely you are to do it. I would have thought so,
yeah.
Yes,
absolutely.
You won't be tolerant of those long queues.
But there was some piece of paperwork that I had to dig out, and I was like, oh, Jesus, I can't find that.
You have loads of time in your hands, Dara Breen. What do you think I do?
What do you think I have?
It's not a lot. But you asked the question. No, you do. Because, as I say, I want to talk to you about the Sun, because we had a lady on from Mayo and she asked the question in a text earlier on, not knowing that you were coming on and that you'd done a documentary on the Sun. She wanted to know, where was the Sun?
This is very important. And now, normally I'm more of a what is the Sun person, But I can give you a very simple answer about where is the Sun. The Sun is exactly where it always is and exactly where it should be. The clouds are the people you've got to be given out to. And in many ways, Chris asking, where is the Sun? Is a bit like a child playing peekaboo. That all it's done is a little. It's like when you lift up and the kid goes, "Where's Daddy gone? Where's Daddy gone? Daddy's gone." And you drop it and go, oh, "Daddy's back." The Sun isn't gone anywhere.
Now our Sun is by comparison, I believe, not that impressive.
No, it's a very mediocre star.
Is it?
It is. Yeah. We'll never go black hole. We'll collapse into just kind of, I think it becomes a red dwarf at the end. It's not a particularly, it'll do for us. It'll end us, you know, it'll get bigger and bigger and bigger and destroy us. I had all that explained to me. This documentary I did, it was for Channel 5, so I'm never sure if these get seen in Ireland. But a lovely Irish scientist called Orla, who we met down in France, who came along and explained to us in some vivid detail how the Sun will destroy us all. But before that, there was a whole thing about, you know, how we created life, and we went and saw an eclipse for the first time. We were in Austin in Texas, and we saw an eclipse, and because of the cloud, the whole thing got covered over and we saw 3 seconds of it.
But that was a glorious 3 seconds, was it?
What a 3 seconds. Yeah. Because there was a big crowd of people there, 5,000 people came out to the town to see it. And the most amazing is everyone says when an eclipse happens, the most exciting thing is when it goes dark enough that it confuses the birds and they all stop flying and it goes really, really quiet. Now in the middle of the city, you don't really see that. But it got so dark that all the skyscrapers, all the light sensors in the skyscrapers, just presumably was nighttime, and the whole city just lit up. It was just a point where all of the skyscrapers just lit up at 1:30 in the afternoon, and there was a massive cheer from the crowd. And then we went into the thing, the show's all happening sort of behind the clouds. It broke for 3 seconds, an eruption of noise from people looking at it, and it's magical. So now I'm on websites checking the next one. And
it,
so
it sounds like an amazing, because it's sort of humbling, I would imagine, because you realise that we're this little ball floating in space.
Totally.
And there you're there with 5,000 people. And was there nearly a religious touch to it? Or
I think for people that were, people who may be more spiritual than I am, we talked to one guy who he filmed himself watching it, and God, the man was, it was a moment. He was having a moment about the whole thing. Yeah. He was transcendent about it all. What I found bizarre is we met a woman there from NASA, and she had brought a book that had every solar eclipse for 5,000 years into the past and for the next 3,000 years. And you're literally able to go, oh, look, there was one over Egypt in whatever number of year. Here's the one that was mentioned in such and such a thing in the first early writing, whatever. And you're able to see it. And it was like seeing some book, you know, in a Marvel, like Loki or something, there's a book that says, oh, this, actually, we've got the history of everything, you know, in this, we're an agent, secret agent that runs time. It was like having one of those books. She literally said, here are 5,000 years of eclipses, and you'll be able to go through them all. And they're all, because they're incredibly predictable.
And you're going to follow them now for the next few years.
I can see myself, because the next one is in Spain in 2026. Northern cuts across northern Spain, all the way across a big band of northern Spain. Anywhere really between Madrid and Barcelona, if you draw a big thick line, you'll see it.
2026,
In August the 12th in 2026. There's one in northern Africa that goes across Luxor. It goes all the way across northern Africa in 2027. And then there's two really good ones in Australia in 2028 that goes across Sydney. And another one in 2030. So they happen intermittently. There won't be one crossing Ireland until 2090, unfortunately.
Right, we won't be around.
We won't be around. But those who are, it goes right across the middle of Ireland.
Wow.
Tullamore will have seen nothing like this. It'll be phenomenal. It goes right across the middle.
My son plans to be around in 2090. I must tell him about that the next time I'm talking to him.
Make the booking now. Get the Airbnb.
When I heard you're going to be following eclipses here, then everywhere, I was thinking your poor family. You know, I was thinking like golf. You know, all for 6 hours on a Saturday. But it's only one every 2 years.
It's only one every 2 years. But the plane we were going on when we flew over was full of, I'd say, men of a certain age. And their wives, and I would chatting to a couple of the wives who went, oh, we've been to China, we've been to Germany. You know, he says, that's grand, you know, it's fine, but you know, it's his thing.
Now, ITER, International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor.
Incredible machine. Down the south of France, near Aix-en-Provence, there is a machine as complicated as the Large Hadron Collider that nobody knows about, which is our, and I say our as humanity's, first serious attempt to build a fusion reactor.
Okay.
And it is so ambitious, this, that it involves countries that in other ways aren't working with each other at all. Russia, China, America, Europe, all of them are joined in to build this incredible machine. 10 million moving parts. And we stood inside the core of it, which you won't be able to do, obviously, once it's all done. It all gets sealed in concrete. And the place we were standing, when it runs, will be minus 248 degrees or 268 degrees. And across from it, like literally 5 metres across from it, will be 115 million degrees.
150 million degrees.
115 million degrees, yeah.
So the nuclear power that we have at the moment is fission. So they split things. And this thing is fusion. Yeah. So they get two hydrogen some things together. And they squish them together.
And the massive heat,
which will heat water and then create steam, and that'll drive turbine, and that's the future.
That's the future. Look, that's what we hope the future is, because I'm not sure what version B of the future is. But this is very much, this is a proper attempt to see if we can make it work. I mean, this thing itself won't be heating any water. We just want to see if it makes it work, and then we'll go and build another 10 million.
But they've been working on this for years and years and
this
years.
This has been an idea for a long time, because as a concept, it's been this for a long time. Yeah, we break things to make nuclear power now, but when you break things, you've got to use really big ones, and they're kind of unstable and they're radioactive.
Right.
If you're pushing things together, you're just pushing hydrogen together, and it's not radioactive.
And the reason you were there at the International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor is that they are trying to replicate what the sun does.
Essentially, yeah. Yes. Where the sun basically squeezes hydrogen together to make helium, and in that releases energy. And that's how we get everything. So that's our sunlight, which is blocked off by the clouds over Mayo, and you never see it. But that's what's happening. 93 million miles away. You'll have to take my word for it.
I'm going to tell people now, if you meet Darrow Breen in the pub, ask him, where is the sun, Darrow? Where is the sun? Because he knows. He's done a documentary of the sun. He knows.
I will point out the window. There, right.
Yeah. Final question on your golden retriever. How's that going for you?
Do you know what? Recall isn't working out too well. Is this traditionally difficult? Because the dog gets really excited on a walk. We try to let her off to have a bit of a run and then bring her back with a bit of, you know, high quality treat.
Yeah.
You know, a bit of sausage, a bit of chicken maybe. Something that, you know, not a dry biscuit, you know. But sometimes she just gets so excited. And I'm in a park in London going, Ivy! Ivy, Ivy, like the guy in the video going, Fenton, Fenton, as a dog ran across the park. And she circles around me and you can see flashes of her. And it's like, you know, White Fang, all these Jack London books they made you read in school or whatever. You can just see the shot of her in the distance or whatever. And then she'll sit down exhausted, panting, and I'll walk slowly towards her and she'll go, oh God, no, I'm not going home yet. And then run away again. And I have spent...
Oh, so it's working well for you. Great.
Oh, it's great. I literally 45 minutes walking after that dog. And I had to get a stranger, because she's a really friendly dog. She's a golden retriever, you know. So I said to some guy, you see that dog there? And he said, yeah. I said, just could you just walk over to her and hold her by the collar? And he went, really? I said, I genuinely mean this. Could you do that? And he walked over and put his hand on her collar. She's placid as anything, so she lets him do it. And then I walk over and she goes, oh, you've got me now.
Very clever. Have you done the test, the intelligence test with golden retrievers?
No, what is that?
Well, we met a lady once when we were out walking our golden retriever when I was young. And so you put a towel over their head, and if they can get out of the towel within 5 seconds, they're bright. If they can't, they're not so bright.
Oh, I dread this.
Maybe you don't want to know. Okay.
I dread that I'd walk out of the room, come back an hour later, she's still there with the towel in the head.
Recreation 2025 Irish Tour, and it's all over the place, but it's in Vicar Street for 7 nights, and that's January 22nd, 25th, 5th to 7th of February, and tickets are on sale now. Darrow, great talking to you.
A pleasure. Give my love to everyone there.
Mind yourself. Good luck. See
you. Talk to you again.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.